It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station, FM 107.1. And joining us this afternoon, we have Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. As I open the program, I want to remind you, reach out to the folks at Harvell and Collins easily via phone at 252 area code 726-9050 or by email. And you can go to their website and check out all the different varieties of services provided at Harvell & Collins at harvellandcollins.com. That's spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com. And with that, good afternoon to you, Cecil.
Hello, Lockwood. Good afternoon to you, too. Today, I think we'll talk about, how do I say this, the devil is in the details.
Right. Always the case. I mean, it's the details that'll catch you every time. So,
right.
What details are we talking about?
Yeah, exactly. Let's go through some common kind of misunderstandings about estate planning document and questions that arise. You know, just many times a day, and right out of the gate, Lockwood. Is the word durable in a durable power of attorney. A lot of folks will call and say, you know, Cecil, I have a power of attorney, but I read somewhere that it needed to be durable. And what in the world does that mean?
Right.
I mean, last time I used that word, it had to do with a tool in the toolbox.
Right.
You know, or an ever-ready battery.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Anyway, durable is an important concept in the world of a power of attorney, Lockwood, and basically what it means is that the document, the power of attorney itself, has language which says that this grant of authority for our loved one to handle our affairs will continue throughout the duration of our incapacity. In other words, it doesn't stop and start. It doesn't have an ending. It just continues indefinitely during the duration of our need for the power of attorney. And that, of course, is what makes it durable. The other side of the coin here, Lockwood, which will help explain it a bit, is that, you know, some powers of attorney, you know, like military or soldiers who go off to war, it's for a limited period of time. Or a power of attorney can be for a specific purpose. I am going to be out of the country, and I cannot close on my condominium, December the 15th. And so I grant a specific day, a specific week, where I'm granting authority to my lawyer or to my wife or to my older son to handle this for me. Those kinds of powers of attorney are not durable because they are used for a specific time. Okay, so it's a very simple answer, but it stumps a lot of folks. Okay,
you know, I'm thinking there are a lot of people who are informed. Okay, I've given you power of attorney, and they're thinking, okay, this will apply to any activity that I've got. However, what you're telling me is that term durable is important if it's going beyond a limited time frame or a limited purpose. So just because I was granted the power of attorney for my child's departure or something of this nature doesn't mean that that power of attorney is valuable in any other instance.
There's
a lot of people who are thinking, maybe out there who are thinking, oh, well, I've got a power of attorney. Well, to your point a few moments ago, devil is in the detail.
Correct.
Wow.
That's right. Now, here comes another one, Lockwood. I'm coming in to see you, Mr. Harvell, because I know that I need to get a do not resuscitate.
Mm-hmm.
I want a living will, Mr. Harvell. I want a desire of natural death, and I want a do not resuscitate. So, in other words, here we go with the details, Lockwood.
Wow. Yeah.
We as attorneys can absolutely prepare what is known under North Carolina law and codified in the North Carolina statutes, a declaration of desire for natural death.
Right.
This is where we declare while we are of sound mind, that if certain conditions exist, such as a terminal and incurable illness, and mm-hmm. such as a persistent vegetative state, not a temporary, the words in the statute aren't temporary, the words mm-hmm. are persistent vegetative state, and if at that time extraordinary means, such as artificial nutrition and artificial hydration, are being utilized, and our medical team feels that the only thing that is prolonging our life uh-huh. are these extraordinary measures, which are defined in the statute again, what is extraordinary and what is not, then it is my desire that my physicians and my team and my family cease those kinds of extraordinary measures and allow me to pass on naturally. Now, that is a declaration of desire for natural death. And where we get confused and where the devil is in the details is in calling that a do not resuscitate. And so here we go, Lockwood. A declaration of desire for natural death or a living will is not a do not resuscitate. A do not resuscitate, your lawyer is not going to be able to prepare and give you that. It is not a legal document per se. It is a medical document.
Oh.
And it is provided to you by your physician. I like to think of it, or I explain it to clients as kind of like a prescription
uh-huh.
that based on, you know, medical history, medical examination, medical consultation, all of these things that we have with our doctor. You know, we're supposed to have it each and every year, as we all know. And we sit down at the end and we discuss things that we're supposed to be doing and certain prescriptions that we're supposed to be taking. Well, if the facts and circumstances as determined by the physician, the doctor, the MD,
mm-hmm.
in, of course, consultation with you as the patient and the family, if the circumstances are such that the doctor feels and you feel as the patient that you should have an order from the doctor, a prescription from the doctor that says that if you have a, quote, stop, a cardiac arrest, the EMS are instructed not to resuscitate, then that is a document that you will have to obtain from your physician. And your lawyer, as much as he wants or she wants to help you, just like we do at Harvell and Collins, we are not going to be able to give you that document, Lockwood. That is not something that a lawyer can prepare. So once again, the devil is in the details. Are we talking about a living will, which is the desire for natural death? We certainly can give you that document, prepare that document. But in terms of a do not resuscitate, That is a document that is an order, a prescription from your physician that you will need to obtain from your physician.
You know, I think that, again, kind of assumed, is my own personal acknowledgement here. I kind of assumed that a DNR, a do not resuscitate, and you mentioned a living will, that
yeah.
basically a natural desire for natural death. We're the same thing. So what we're hearing right now, and by the way, I quickly discern something I want to ask you about related to the do not resuscitate. If you, in fact, have that document, that do not resuscitate, frankly, that has to be with the patient because, as you just pointed out, in the case of emergency services, they will come in to apply medical assistance. They need to know in advance whether or not they can do that, and that do not resuscitate, I would assume, should be with the patient itself or with the individual. Am I correct on that?
That is correct, and there are sometimes bracelets
mm-hmm.
that the patient will wear on their wrist that indicate that they have a do not resuscitate. I think they, I don't think, but I know I've heard and been and read that there should be notification
right.
Posted on the refrigerator in a prominent place in the home or in the apartment.
Okay.
The patient may have it, you know, there, you
right.
know, in the area of living space
right.
where they live. Because yes, I mean, the context of this to talk, and I don't want to go up and step on the toes of medical doctors because I certainly am not one, but, you know, the patient has had stops and starts. There have been, there's a medical history of this patient having, you know, having stopped, if you will, and then being resuscitated by EMS or the emergency room or whatever the case be. And there just comes a point where the patient confronts his physician or her physician and says, you know, what about this? I don't want to continue this kind of trauma in my life. And if I have another stop, then are you willing to sign an order or a prescription for me order that I not be resuscitated? And again, that is very, very different, Lockwood, than a living will. A living will or the declaration or desire for natural death is not an acute document. It's not an emergency document such as a DNR. It is a what we might call a chronic document. Mm-hmm. It's a document that there's going to be the development of a medical record over a period of time, over what's known as a persistent period of time, and that the medical facts and circumstances indicate that over a period of time, we are being kept alive, weeks, months, several weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, you know, we are being kept alive only because of the artificial nature of the medical technology that's being administered. And if I, as a patient, find myself in this circumstance where only artificial means are keeping me alive, then I do not want that to continue indefinitely.
Right.
And that, of course, is the document that the North Carolina legislature sets forth and declares that we can sign it and make a declaration of our desire that we have a natural death if those conditions exist.
We're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And again, I'm going to remind you the address. The email address, that's the best way to reach out to them, and that is Cecil Harvell at harvellandcollins.com. And also go to their website, harvellandcollins.com, and then spell out the word and, please. Or give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. Cecil, before we move on to other items, I've got a quick question for you related to the natural will or living will, the declaration for natural death. Obviously, that's a document. Now, you know, in a particular case, obviously the family's sitting in a situation, and I know of instances where this has happened. The family's in dispute over whether or not to let their loved one pass on to die naturally. But the where would someone keep a living will? Would that obviously be with their normal will activities? But you know, sometimes families aren't really aware of this document. So what would you suggest to the audience?
Well, some of our listeners are going to are listening, Lockwood, and are saying to themselves, but goodness, you know, Mr. Lockwood and Mr. Cecil, I was asked to give a copy of these documents to Vidan or to Duke or to Wake or to wherever before I had my surgery. They ask me point blank, do you have a health care power of attorney? Do you have a living will? And if you do, we would like to have a copy of it to put on your chart. So these documents are very much in circulation.
Wonderful.
Nurses and physicians and assistants in the medical field certainly know of them, administrators in the hospitals. But to go further into your question, all of these documents, I think, should be kept together.
Mm-hmm.
They're your important personal papers in terms of your will, your power of attorney, your living will. We're going to talk about a couple more here in a minute. But the bottom line is let's keep them all together and keep them in a safe place. I think that it is nice to tell your representatives, your loved ones, your agents under these documents, which are called particularly your executor, your trustee, your agent under a power of attorney. They need to know where you've kept these documents. Mm-hmm. And some people will even provide a copy of these documents to their oldest son, their oldest daughter, you know, the loved one in their family that's in charge. So to hide them away, Lockwood, okay, that's the other alternative, and not let anyone know they're there is not what we want you to do. Okay. After all, you have gotten these, you're the lucky ones. You went to the trouble to get the document right. prepared. You paid for it at a lawyer's office. We certainly now want our family members, our loved ones, you know, our doctors mm-hmm. to know where these documents okay. are. Many people will add their living will, their health care power of attorney, Lockwood, to the chart, even right. at their general doctor's office, okay. so that their physician has a copy. So once we get them prepared and signed and notarized, witnessed, then we certainly need to put some copies in the appropriate places.
I thank you very much for the clarity on that. The devil is in the details. We're talking with Cecil mm-hmm. Harvell, Harvell and Collins. Other items, Cecil?
Everywhere we go now, Lockwood, even the dentist, we sign these forms out front in right. the reception area mm-hmm. granting, you know, the HIPAA release, mm-hmm. the Privacy Act release to our loved one. We say that if we are, you know, that we hereby give our daughter, our son, our wife, right. you know, the authority to have a copy of our medical records. Mm-hmm. And the reason for this is that the medical provider, you know, just cannot give a copy to anyone under new health privacy laws unless there is a signed medical release. Mm-hmm. And so our listeners are saying, oh, yeah, that's right, Cecil. I just went to my physician and updated those. I just went to my dentist. I just went over to have a radiologist, met with a radiologist or whatever the case might be. Wherever we happen to go, we are now signing these releases. So the devil in the details issue comes in the fact that all of us should have, Lockwood, a general HIPAA release Ooh. In our important papers, so that we hereby grant the authority to our loved one to receive our medical records. And this is general in nature, in that this document would be applicable at a place where we've not previously signed an authority.
Right.
I mean, many of us, you know, we never planned to be at Vidant. We never planned to be at yep. the Cleveland Clinic or at Sloan Kettering uh-huh. or, you know, Duke or Wake Medical Center. You know, we plan to be at our general physician or our dentist in town, but we really didn't make plans to be at some of these other places. And so, therefore, at these other places, Lockwood, we do not have a medical release or a HIPAA release on record. And so our loved ones need a general one, along with the living will, along with the durable power of attorney. They need a general HIPAA release with our important papers, so that they can uplift that and take that to Duke or Wake mm-hmm. or Cleveland or wherever we happen to be able to obtain our medical records.
You know, Cecil, I'm jumping ahead. I have no idea what's coming next, but you okay. have just struck a very important note here. To your point, no one expects to be in the emergency room. However, an accident occurs and you're taken to the emergency room. Well, you're comatose. You have no ability to sign any kind of form. So the emergency room is, of course, treating you. That general, strikes me, that general HIPAA release is important for the parents, for the children, for the loved ones. They can't just walk into the emergency room and say, hey, I'm the father of or the mother of, so therefore give me the information. The hospital is going to be very resistant to that. So unless, you know, I hadn't even considered that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of all this,
I can't emphasize what you're saying more than how you have emphasized yeah. it, Lockwood, and you're absolutely correct.
Yeah,
our medical providers tend to a little bit look the other way, maybe possibly the mm-hmm. nurses, the administrators, you know, when the wife is standing right there.
Right.
Beside the bedside of the husband, or right. the husband beside the bedside of the wife. But when we move beyond that most profound yeah. relationship of marriage, and we move to our children, you know, well, which child has the authority? Uh-huh. I mean, some of us got 2, 3, 4 children. We can't just give our medical records to any child. They're not going to do that. They want to know who is the designee, who has been appointed as your as your release agent, who has authority to get these documents, Mr. Jones. And of course, and the children, or loved one or neighbor, whoever it is, that's this significant person in one's life, is not going to be able to get those medical records unless there is this generalized HIPAA release. So as a part of all of the documents that we prepare at our office when folks come in for estate planning, this is certainly one that's up at the top of the list.
Absolutely. I apologize. I jumped right into that observation, but that is, knowing the vagaries of HIPAA regulations and so forth, and the hesitancy on the part of medical practitioners to provide information, which I can appreciate, this is the devil is in the details, as you said a moment ago. All right, for our final item here, what would that be, Cecil?
Well, that's the confusion between the durable power of attorney and the health care power of attorney. Again, Lockwood, these documents are codified by the North Carolina statutes. They are there are chapters within the North Carolina general statutes that go on, I might add, for pages and pages. The law, if you will, after all, that is the law concerning the durable power of attorney. What language would make it durable? When does it start? When does it end? And the same with regard to a health care power of attorney. A health care power of attorney is going to designate who can sign for surgery, anesthesia, diagnostic procedure, anything that we might need in a health care setting. The financial power of attorney, of course, is going to speak to the banks, to, you know, to the stock companies of the world, the A.G. Edwards and Edward Jones, financial investors of the world. Is going to speak to the DMV relative to the transfer of title of our cars. It's going to talk to the register of deeds as to any kind of transfer or any kind of thing that we might do relative to our real property, our land, our home. So in other words, the durable power of attorney is going to speak to a very specific financial audience. The health care power of attorney is going to speak to a very specific, you know, medical audience. And many of the devil's in the details, many of our clients will say, well, I got a durable power of attorney, but I thought it included the medical.
Right.
I didn't know that I needed a separate document for medical from the power of attorney that I already have. And of course, again, Lockwood, to repeat, the devil is in the details, and we have to then explain to that good client that yes, you do. You need a financial power of attorney, and you also need a health care power of attorney. They are different statutes in North Carolina, different chapters. They have different kinds of signature requirements. They have different kinds of recording requirements at the register of deeds, and they certainly speak to totally and different audiences. So as one would expect, the North Carolina legislature did not put it all in one box and stir it up and out comes, you know, a power of attorney for both purposes. That's just not our law in the state of North Carolina. They are separate and distinct laws. They are separate and distinct documents.
You know, we're talking about powers of attorney with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. And again, remind you, Harvell and Collins, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com to read, get more information. And also, by the way, to hear this interview again. And there's some information that we've just been shared that I think is really important. I want to go back to a few items with you quickly here, Cecil. And again, I thank you for your time today. You know, the issue of HIPAA and your health care power of attorney, your HIPAA release and things of this nature, would that automatically be part of the health care power of attorney, or is there
it really? Also is a separate and distinct document because the HIPAA privacy regulations are are very, very specific, and that document, the HIPAA release, is going to address those very specific things. The healthcare power of attorney is going to speak more in terms of, you know, who can sign for surgery, anesthesia, diagnostic procedures, any kind of procedure or any kind of motion forward in the hospital and or medical setting. The HIPAA release, keep in mind, could be just medical records from, you know, from a physician's office, from something that was not, you know, acute nature. You know, our dental records, our mental health records, right. our generalized physician records, very, very different than granting authority in a hospital setting for surgery and anesthesia.
You know, this, of course, I'm a little amazed by this. I'm learning something as well with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. So, Cecil, although I go through the bank, my physician or my dentist, I never thought about HIPAA regulations with dental care, but okay, HIPAA regulations, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm signing this, so my children, I may name a child on the list, or and again, obviously my wife, and I'm making an assumption, okay, if for some reason they need to send me to the hospital right away, I have released, I don't have to worry about anything, they're going to be able to take care of me. In reality, you're telling me that is not the case. Again, to your comment, devil is in the details, and we have to be very specific in our activities and our actions to assure that we have the ability, to receive care for all intents and purposes. That is I'm walking away from this conversation, say walking away, figuratively speaking, with a new awareness of the importance of these details, Cecil.
Yes, and Lockwood, we're about to conclude, but one of the impressions, I like being candid and honest and direct because it's just the best way to be. Somebody somewhere said that. I don't know who.
We'll give it to you.
Yeah, okay. But some of our listeners thinking, oh, gosh, all these documents and you lawyers and, right. and you North Carolina, you know, by the time I get out of your office, I'm going to have a stack of paper, a foot thick, and it's going to cost me thousands of dollars. Yeah. I know what you're thinking. Right. I know what you're thinking. And the answer, I want to be direct and candid, and here it comes, is that's just not accurate, Lockwood. These are five documents: a will, a power of attorney, a health care power of attorney, a living will, and a HIPAA release. And all of those documents, when they are just simple and direct and just as boilerplate as it gets, if you will, we're talking about, anywhere from $400.
Oh, okay? Wow.
For all of those documents, Lockwood. Okay? It's not $4,000. It's
right.
not, $1,000. These are straightforward documents. Good lawyers in the area of estate have these documents readily available. The matter of making an appointment and going through them with some semblance of detail with your lawyer, but we are not talking about something that is going to run into thousands of dollars, and we're not talking about something that will take weeks and weeks and weeks to get. I also advise against the internet and pre-printed forms that are out there circulating. Now all of a sudden something that we could have gotten for $400 or $500 can end up costing us $4,000 or $5,000 because it doesn't have a particular provision, or it's not a North Carolina document, it's a Tennessee document or a Texas document, something that has not been reviewed by a practicing lawyer in North Carolina. Let's just don't do that.
Okay.
Go in and see your lawyer. Get a price quote for these documents, and then make a decision. Yes, proceed. I give you the green light, or no, thank you very much. But I'm just going to wait for now.
Two good points out of this. First, with Cecil, again, we're talking with Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins, and I strongly recommend pay close attention to these. This today's program, devil is in the details, and I apologize for being so forceful, but this is very important. Two items. Number one, I know of instances personally where families have been brought into a great deal of dispute because there was no conclusion as to how to handle a loved one's final days. And then the second point, and I think you just touched on it, just because I have my durable power of attorney or my healthcare power of attorney or any of these documents done in another state does not necessarily mean that when I relocate, that document is still accurate or useful in the state in which I've relocated. So that's a particularly important issue as well, to Cecil.
Well, it is. Lockwood. What we're hearing today, and I'm so glad you brought that up, by the way, Lockwood, we're hearing over and over again the North Carolina legislature.
Right.
These documents are documents that are still within the control and purview of the individual
states.
There is no federal power of attorney.
Gotcha.
Or federal health care power of attorney, or even federal living will. They are state-oriented documents.
Okay.
So it's important that you have the document reviewed in the state in which you live and make sure that it's in conformity with that particular state's law.
I think that's a very important conclusion on this program today with Harvell and Collins. And again, that was Cecil Harvell. Let's Talk Legal. And I want to remind you, go to the website, harvellandcollins.com. You can hear this interview. You can hear a lot of other interviews. But this was, I think, very important. The devil is in the details. Cecil, as always, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Lockwood.